That's Give Him a Great Big Kiss by the Shangri-Las. Marge Ganser of Shangri-Las passed away on this day in 1996. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. One of the things that happened in the last week was that Councilman Branch suggested in City Council that the new state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, reopen the cases of Tyrone West, Anthony Anderson, and Maurice Johnson. And it's led to a huge conversation here about what should be done in the light of evidence. We invited J. Wendell Gordon on, who represents Anthony Anderson. He could not come because he was in court this morning, but he did send an email that I'll share some of the things he was talking about as well. And we have an email already from Clarence. But you can join us here at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at talk@standardshow.org with your ideas and thoughts. We are joined in studio by Dwight Pettit, defense attorney who's represented clients in lawsuits against police in many misconduct cases and is representing Tyrone West's family here in the city of Baltimore. Tom Ronick is a Baltimore attorney, hosts also the Tom Moore Show on 680 WCBM on the AM side of the dial. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. So what were your initial thoughts, Dwight, when you heard Councilman Branch suggest that these cases should be reopened? Is that a legal possibility?
Well, it's a legal possibility, and it raises a unique question. And one of the reasons that I think would the basis for doing that is that the investigation, in my opinion, on all three cases was very sparse. And I can directly speak about West, because I met with the state's attorney at the time, Mr. Bernstein, and
that's
I know
right.
that they had a very – I met with him with the family, and it was a very, very limited investigation, if any at all. They basically adopted the reports from the police department and confirmed that that's what they were relying on. And the autopsy, which is very, very questionable. And so I don't think there was any type of intensive investigation. And at least we can say that there was nothing brought before any type of grand jury for any type of objective judicial review or legal review.
So this is unlike cases that have been tried, these are cases that have never been tried. They were not before the grand jury, so they can legally be brought back again.
Right. I see nothing in terms of double jeopardy.
So what would it mean to bring them back again, Tom?
Well, it would reopen that possibility that it could get in front of a grand jury. If they were to reopen it, find new evidence, and it was presented to the grand jury, then there could be indictments.
So, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. I was texting back and forth with Tyrone's sister last night because of the celebration, that the event they had remembering the second year of his death. And one of the things that came up was in an email from J. Wendell Gordon, who I said is also an attorney and represents the Anthony Anderson's family, said he wished he could have been on the show but can't, and saying that that Anderson, he says, is a big story. There are lots of facts that have come out through discovery. Anderson's life could have been saved if police who were responsible for his death did not mislead healthcare professionals about his condition. He was unconscious due to a drug said he was unconscious due to a drug overdose when they knew it was trauma, and they wasted 16 life-saving minutes at the scene, and that no drugs were found in Anderson's system, and he died of blunt force trauma. So what is that? I mean, so when we live in a system where we rely on our criminal justice system, on the state's attorney, on our grand juries to deliver some form of justice, but then it's challenged by people like you in the case of Tyrone West and by people like J. Wendell Gordon in the case of Anthony Anderson, saying that the investigations were not thorough, that we don't know the whole truth. I mean, what does that say about where we are? Like, you know?
Well, you know, it says that politically we invoked certain considerations to change the political system. We did in the state's attorney's instance. And so it's a good example of the political system operating when it's in a disagreement with what the conclusions were made beforehand.
So what do you think political? Go ahead, we're going to say, Tom.
I think that there's a different standard of law, though, and I think that's a very important point. On the civil side, I think that these types of things can be found, and I think it would show that they may have an excellent civil case. And I haven't seen Dwight's case, obviously, and he has a different perspective representing Mr. West. But that being said, there is something about precedent. The fact that the previous state attorney did look at this and did, in his vision, did not find anything there. And obviously, Marilyn Mosby ran on a campaign of wanting to change things. And I'm a supporter of hers. I support what she wants to do. That being said, is there really enough to reopen it? The precedent is not really there. I mean, it can be done, but it's very, very rare that something like this would be done.
But the question is, folks, please join us here at 410-319-8888. I have a question about Marilyn Mosby and what she can do, and also when you mentioned the civil cases, and I want to come back to what that means in terms of the longer sense of justice in our society, broader sense of justice. But Clarence wrote in, when he wrote to talkatsteinershow.org, Branch's action, Councilman Branch's action, in the public forum is tantamount to blindsiding Mrs. Mosby and the city state's attorney's office. In the midst of the Freddie Gray case and the battle for justice and a war between the police department and Mrs. Mosby's office, Councilman Branch would, by his actions in public, would recklessly try to open up another front. Branch should have at that point in time called all parties in private, discussed the actions after Freddie Gray's case is over.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess what you're saying, that she obviously has a lot on her plate with Freddie Gray. And that raises a serious question with the political attack that she's under across the nation in many cases, in a lot of instances, whether she would want to open another front that she would have to defend while Freddie Gray is in progress. But as I understand it, and Tom can correct me if I'm wrong, there's no statute of limitations. So she can really wait easily until Freddie Gray is terminated, because that's going to be moving rather rapidly as a criminal proceeding, and she still could, in fact, act on these other cases if she, in fact, chose to do so. Now, she, from my understanding, she has met with the West family even before Branch made his pronouncements. And so
had met with them.
Had met.
I'm saying it makes sense.
Yes, with the West family.
Right.
They have petitioned her to reopen West, to my understanding, which had nothing to do with Freddie Gray. They've already been moving on this because this family has been, as you know, continually hammering away the fact that there was a terrible injustice done in terms of Tyrone West.
410-319-8888. What are your thoughts about reopening these cases? Also, we're going to talk a bit about the attorneys for the police officers in the Freddie Gray case, talking about the investigation being done that had been done by Mosby's office is not being thorough and also not being open. And what do we think about that? 410-319-8888. So let me ask that now. What do you think about that charge?
As I have said on this subject, of course they're going to say that. They're defending their client. That's what defense attorneys are supposed to do. That being said, the state's attorney's office has an obligation to provide the discoverable material. And then to the extent that defense has discoverable material, we have to provide that to the state's attorney's office. But that doesn't mean she's going to lay all of her trial strategy cards on the table. And I think that's really where the sort of difficulty is. Is it more trial strategy or is it discovery that's not been turned over?
And Tom is correct. And what the state is claiming is this is work product. This is strategies, decisions that are made in this so-called separate investigation, separate and apart from the police investigation, and that this is not discovery. But Judge Williams will sort this out. This is not the, in my opinion, this is sort of a smokescreen. This is not the main issue.
This is legal theater, is what you're saying.
Yes. This is not as relevant and impactful as the main questions that were before Judge Williams. And that's number one, whether he would change the venue and move it out of Baltimore City.
Yes.
And number two, whether there will be separate trials based on statements that might have been made by co-defendants.
And so the chances, what do you think? Both of those things have good chances, don't they?
Yes, they do. And that's the real serious questions, in my opinion, in terms of the motions that have some weight. That's what's really before the court.
So if it's moved, let's say the trial on the officers is moved from Baltimore City. Trial or trials are moved from Baltimore City. Let's say that take place in Howard County or in Allegheny County, wherever they might move it to. That means that the jury pool has to come from those counties, correct?
That's exactly right.
And it changes the whole circumference of the case.
Most realistically, it's going to end up in Wicomico County. My prediction, because of the demographics.
I'll tell you why I said that was such a
shock. I'm sort of shocked by that.
Why would you say that?
I think the demographics are similar. There's some similar demographics, and I think you've got to get it far enough away for Baltimore.
But what's the similarity of demographics, Tom?
Well,
that's night and day.
Well, not necessarily with Comico. You have a larger African American population.
But nothing like.
You're not going to find exact, obviously.
But it is. I mean, now let me say two things.
Prince George's County.
You took the words out of my mouth.
You could.
You do have a county which would be. Sort of a mirror of Baltimore City, and that would be Prince George's. The problem is, and I'm going to raise something on your show here, Mark, that nobody's really looked at because I litigated it, and that is the fact there's no mechanism in Maryland law for any type of hearing once the decision is made to move it. In other words, it's a two-pronged situation. The trial judge can say, yes, we're going to remove this. I order that the venue be changed because press exposure, et cetera. And then it goes to the administrative judge, which by statute has no hearing mechanism as to where the case is going to go.
Absolutely right.
And that's the fallacy that I believe is the constitutional issue in the Maryland statute that makes it unconstitutional is what you were talking about earlier in terms of due process of law.
And that's really fascinating. I mean, Madeline Mosby could argue that if she wanted to.
If it's removed.
If it's removed.
Because then the question becomes where. And my argument has always, and I learned this, we did this in the, you may not remember the Joe Mungo case, the young man, the 7-year-older that was chained up in the. And they removed it to Howard County. We won the case on the merits, but the Howard County jury, which was predominantly white, didn't give us any economic relief. And that's where we argued this in front of the Court of Appeals, that Maryland's statute is vague, arbitrary, and capricious, and unconstitutional because there's no mechanism for hearing to take testimony or take evidence in relationship to what the receiving county should be and whether that receiving county should be a reflection of the county in which you're leaving.
And what was the result of that?
The city which you're leaving. The court said disagreed with them, said upheld the constitutionality of it. I don't think they explained it very well.
Obviously not to your liking, Dwight.
But you know, when you said Wicomico County, let me just throw this out before we go to the phones here. The reason I reacted the way I did was we just finished doing a program here on the removal of a black police chief from Pocomoke City, a former city police officer. And the Eastern Shore, which I've had a lot of experience with, from being the youngest person arrested in the Civil Rights Administration in Cambridge with Larry Richardson from way back in the dark ages of 1961, to my time doing stories there in the last several years, the Eastern Shore, while the demographics at Wicomico may be, you know, maybe half and half, black and white, the political power of black people in the Eastern Shore is like 1955.
Yes.
There is no political power. They are denied right to participation. They're denied the right to vote in many ways, being kept from the polls. They're denied the seats on the county councils and on the city councils of the whole community by having one district that's black and five that are white in areas that are half and half. I mean, it is one of the most racist places
in the state. Let's be straight up, Mark. If the case leaves Baltimore City, unless it goes to Prince George's County, it's over.
That's right.
The defense is won. Simple as that.
Right.
This is where I'll put my cards on the table. Dwight did earlier. I mean, I have an office in Ocean City, and I practice regularly.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
So,
I
understand that sentiment. I don't think it's quite that bad. However, I do think that there's certainly strides that need to be made, and I think strides that can be made. But I mean, these are generational shift type things.
But they're more than generational. I mean, you take Pocomoke City. I don't want to get into this now because we have to get back to our topic. But Pocomoke City, half population is white, half population is black. One black city council person because of the way they gerrymandered the districts to ensure that blacks would not have half or more of the city council seats. That's Pocomoke City. That's the Eastern Shore.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eastern Shore is famous or infamous.
Infamous. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
You old freedom fighter, you. And, Dwight Pettit and all of you great lawyers, and he's a terrific lawyer.
Good morning,
Leo. I agree essentially with Dwight. I mean, come on. Maryland is a slave state. I mean, for real. Slavery isn't dead here, and the political system is such that the democratic political machine operates in such a way that the judiciary, the judges, as well as the police, operate in concert to block any real advancement in changes, systemic changes, such as the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights and all of those kinds of things that need reform. So we're looking at, when they look at Freddie, not just Freddie Gray, but Tyrone West, I keep hearing Tawanda Jones telling me that she never thought that she requested an autopsy report in total and had a hell of a time. Am I right, Dwight?
Yes,
in
you're
getting,
right.
In getting an autopsy report from David Fowler. David Fowler is the chief medical examiner of the state of Maryland,
right.
And he was just as intransigent as the rest. It seems as though they conspire. There's always some kind of obstruction of justice. This is what they called, Mark, back in the 60s, massive resistance. You remember that terminology?
I do, yes.
Well, the state operates in such a way as to massively resist efforts at reform across the board, i.e., certainly when it comes to matters of race and justice. We are, talk about Mississippi, my God, Maryland, Maryland is as bad in many instances as Mississippi any day. We got the same people holding elective office 40 years. You got Mike Miller at the helm 40 years in legislature. Mike Bush, how many, 30, 35? I'm just saying, you got a systemic pattern here that is going to require a real revolution to change this the status quo.
It's always good to hear from you. Let me talk, and let me get back to a point here. Very good question. So the Tyrone West family has yet to see the autopsy report? Is that what six years?
Well, they, when they were trying to request it. As counsel, we literally had significant opposition to it. We filed all types of subpoenas and what have you. We finally got it in piecemeal in terms of it being contracted out. Was part of the excuse as to why they didn't have it. I'm still sort of confused as to why certain photographs were not taken and certain things that are normally done. And so there was a great amount of, and is a great amount of resistance to the release of that and how they reached their conclusions. And that, you're right, that will be a major part of the trial. As you know, Mark, we're in federal court now. And so a lot of these things are coming about in terms of the discovery as we press forward in terms of the litigation.
So what does it say about where we are in some ways? And Tom, I'll let you start here. That we talked earlier about, I think you even brought up the question of the civil suits that can take place now with these three cases and other cases. We've already seen millions of dollars in settlements going out from Baltimore City in police brutality cases in Baltimore. But you know, what does it say about where we are when we have to rely on civil suits as opposed to criminal justice to get justice?
That there's a systemic need for change is really what it says. Because when you have that many suits and for the amount of money that is being won, even before the reduction by judges in some cases, it says that the police need to fix some problems that have been there for a long time. And I think that's something that obviously casts a negative light on the city.
But the city has, as Tom realizes, even with the monies that have been spent, have been significantly protected because of what we've discussed before, Mark, caps. And the
caps.
Verdicts that would have really been rendered.
Explain what you mean by caps.
There's a $200,000 cap per individual in terms of torts or wrongs committed by the city, and a $400,000 cap overall per event. That's going to be increased in October when it goes to $400,000-$800,000. But heretofore, no matter what, whether it's wrongful death, serious injury, skull cracked, or what have you, you could get a multimillion-dollar verdict, as I've received before. We've gotten multimillion-dollar verdicts that were reduced to the $200,000 cap. And so the city has been very well protected under the Local Tort Claims Act by
yes.
these particular. Now, let me just make one correction. I said earlier, pursuant to your question, statute of limitations in terms of criminal. See, there
right.
is a statute of limitation as it relates to misdemeanors. I was just thinking there's no statute of limitations as to felonies.
To felonies.
To any felony.
Right. Well, in general, I'm going to say that.
Right,
I
right,
research
right.
that question.
Right.
Yeah, I was thinking along the lines of felonies as well. But as far as the caps, obviously, even the expansion doesn't necessarily affect the families, because if they've lost all this money that the person was making who died, whether it's a father, son, whatever, it really doesn't pay for anything. It really doesn't get them the kind of money they need to move forward, and that's why these caps need to be revisited.
I mean, and the question here to me also is, I mean, it has to do with the difficulties and fears of indicting police officers who may have committed a crime or may have been too abusive in the middle of their work, in their work in arresting citizens. I mean, that's, and we can't seem to get to that at all. I mean, and it's, you know, I wasn't there when Tyrone West died. I wasn't there when Anthony Anderson died. But I remember asking the question, nor Maurice Johnson, but when I remember asking the question of State's Attorney then Bernstein, and to the police commissioner at that time, what is excessive force? When you're arresting another a man, why is it necessary to pick him up above your shoulder and slam him to the ground when you had four officers surrounding him? Could easily have subdued him without all that. So, I mean, what you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's – how do we get to that?
Right, and we'd ask the same question. I believe if the public had – if there'd been video – which would have been exposed as to the West, how in the world can you justify 10 officers beating somebody who's already in custody?
And hasn't been charged.
And has not been charged on a simple – you talk about traffic now. We're going back to Florida – I mean to Texas.
We're going back to Rodney King. Yeah, we're going back to 92.
On a simple
right.
traffic offense.
Right.
And a man that's begging for his life that you stop – you got me, so please stop beating me.
Right.
You know, that is obviously excessive force, in my opinion,
from the
and criminal.
From the police perspective, we don't know what has happened before that recording took place. We don't know exactly what that person did. But as Dwight said, at some point, you just subdue the guy, put him in handcuffs, put him in the van, and then that's that.
Right.
Or it should be that anyway.
No, but I think this is nothing new. I mean, it happened to me in this city in 1971 after I was arrested. They decided to put handcuffs on me, on my legs and my ankles and my wrists, throw them in the air and beat me for 15 minutes, bloody my face, hit me with nightsticks, and then arrest me.
And you did nothing.
Well, no, I did something. I had a fight with a police officer who tried to hit me, and I didn't agree with him, so we had a disagreement on the street. But I was beaten up, and then after I had given up.
Right. But I mean, that's the penalty that was invoked against
right, right.
judge, judiciary, and executioner.
Right. right. And so, I mean, I think that we have to get to a point where that's addressed. I mean, you can look at European police forces. That kind of day-to-day violence does not take place against the citizens of France and Germany and Britain when people are arrested.
They don't even carry guns, many of those jurisdictions.
You know what I'm saying? We're missing something here.
Well, we're in a unique situation in the good old U.S. of A. that has created this type of mentality that the police departments adopt. And that is the fact that they have – you know, the title of my book, Mark, as you know, is Under Color of Law.
Right.
And that's the premise, that the police
right.
are acting with their authority, whether it's legal or illegal. Their perception is they have the power to do anything that they want to do because they're acting pursuant to and under color of law.
A quick question then as we wrap this up. Do you think – what are your sense that Marilyn Mosby may not reindict but reopen the cases for investigation – at least in Tyrone West and Anthony Anderson. What do you think will happen?
I think she'll delay the decision. I think she'll say we'll consider. Right, exactly. That's my take.
And I sort of agree with that because of what she's involved in right now. The first call, I think, you had to take,
the email
to take on double fronts right now. I can understand her if she delays that reopening.
Because she is politically under attack. Whether you agree with everything Marilyn Mosby has done or said or not, she's been under attack here in the city, in the state, but also around the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are lawyers writing things all the time about how she did not get a good case going, that what she did was kind of against legal procedure. I mean, she's under really serious
Look,
attack.
Look, she moved into areas which had not been moved into before. I compare it all the way to Star Trek. She moved into brand new areas where others had failed or refused to travel.
Boldly go where no one has gone before.
Exactly. And so this young lady stepped into office after just 3 months. This exploded on her. And I think she's done an extraordinary job in terms of moving forward with the Freddie Gray case as well as the overall running her office, considering the personal attacks that she's been under. Not just the general legal attacks, but the personal attacks that she's been under.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. I
think that people don't know the whole story of what she has. They don't know exactly why she went forward with the charges because she hasn't put all the evidence out there. And I think if people rush to judge this, then that's a reaction some people are going to have. And obviously the armchair quarterback folks, the commentators outside the state, they don't know this. They're just going off of what they have seen. And I think give her the benefit of the doubt. let the cases move forward. Obviously, if she can't prove it, she can't.
And let's remember, you know, Mark, she was reorganizing her office when all this took place. She just got there. She was just putting people in place, new staff, new, you know, operation mechanisms and so forth. So she's had a tremendous burden and test since elected very recently.
Well, there's so much more to talk about here, and I really do appreciate the time that you two have given our listeners, because I know how busy you both are with your legal work. And more. And Tom Moore, good to have you in the studio once again.
Always a
attorney,
pleasure.
Also hosts the Tom Moore Show on AM 680 WCVM. What time does that come on? 10 o'clock?
10 p.m. on Saturday.
10 p.m. on Saturday.
And a jazz artist. And we're on a jazz station.
That's right. And Dwight Pettit, an old friend, defense attorney who's represented clients in lawsuits against police misconduct cases, written an incredible book called The Color of Law, and has been a longtime figure in the legal community and in our civil rights community. Wonderful to have you back in the studio, Dwight. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
We're going to take a very brief break here and come back after after the news. And we are going to break here with Crank That, Soulja Boy, who was born on this day in 1990. Happy birthday, Soulja Boy. Don't go away. We'll be right back as we will investigate guns and violence in America, history and now. Stay with us.
Crank that soul. Now I mean you. Crank that soul. Now I mean you. Crank that soul. Now I mean you.